The Kraft Music Hall with Bing Crosby, Mary Martin, Victor Borga, John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, the Music Maids and Hal, and Bing's distinguished visitors, Ruth Hussey, soon to be seen in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture Pierre of the Plains, Bing's pal Frank McHugh, and David Freeman, national badminton champion of the United States. And here's Bing Crosby.
The weather's fine for flying. The fog has gone to bed. There's such good visibility. You can see victory ahead. Let's fill the air with eagles. Let's fill the clouds with men. And we will see a world that's free when we fly home again. Give us a little ride.
The pilot said to the navigator,
won't you slide inside?
The navigator, he looked around and said to the engineer,
oh, your hands are dirty, your pants are dirty, you're dirty behind the ear.
Set the bumper dear to the gunner.
Well, how are we fixed for lead?
The pilot said to the radio man,
how's the weather ahead?
Set the bumper dear to the pilot.
Give us that pretty crate. 5 degrees to the right will make it, just as sure as fate.
The ship belonged to the bombardier who opened his little bay. He saw the target, the lovely target, and suddenly...
bombs away!
Said the bombardier to the pilot.
Call it a day.
And then the pilot said to the radio man,
say we've done it again.
The weather's fine for flying. The fog has gone to bed.
Clouds with men, and we will see a world that's free when we fly home again.
That, friends, was the Bombardier's song, dedicated by its authors, Rogers and Hart, to those hard-hitting, hell-from-heaven guys who have it over everything else in the world. By a bomb sight. Being shortwave to every United States battle station from Port-au-Prince to Port Darwin makes it possible for us to salute the bombardiers in Australia, on the British Isles, in India, in China, and above all, the United States bombardiers over Germany and Japan. 135 million home folks want to hear that you've let a little light into a lot of dark places. They want you to keep that old peeper plastered to that bomb sight, and when the time comes, they want you to press the button that'll open up an old airplane factory in occupied France. They'd like to have you open a steel mill in Essen, Germany. Open it wide and let the sunshine in. Open a Jap cruiser in the Pacific and let the ocean in. You know, Mary, I was thinking it certainly must give a guy a feeling of importance to be a bombardier, huh?
They make a hit wherever they go.
That's what they do.
Of course, it may be that feeling of self-confidence they all have that made the bombardiers a little careless.
Careless? In what way?
Oh, I don't know. It just seems to me they're always dropping things.
Bunch of butterfingers, aren't they?
Yes. Oh, but we love them. I think it's just wonderful the way the soldiers are all doing the things civilians should be doing. I mean, like buying bonds and cooperating on the salvage drives. Have you noticed, Ken?
Buying bonds? Oh, yes, I noticed that. But it doesn't seem to me that soldiers would have much time for collecting old salvage metal.
Oh, I don't know. The other day I heard two privates saying they'd like to get their hands on some old brass hats.
Are you sure they were privates?
I think so. They didn't have anything on their shoulders.
Well, they might have been sergeants.
I thought a sergeant had a chip on his shoulder.
Look, Mary, only commissioned officers wear insignia on their shoulders. Sergeants have stripes.
Well, so do zebras, but they don't go around telling horses what to wear to head in.
Look, if you hear of one that does, see me, will you? See me.
Comes a lieutenant. That's one bar, isn't it?
That's right.
And a captain is two bars, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
What's four bars?
It's a guardhouse window.
What comes after captain?
A major. He wears a gold leaf on his shoulder. Lieutenant colonel wears a silver leaf, and colonel has an eagle on his shoulder.
A great big high officer like a colonel has nothing but a little old eagle on his shoulder?
Well, sometimes he has a pigeon on his knee.
I thought that was general.
No. General has 1, 2, 3, or 4 stars, according to his rank.
How nice. Can he pick his own stars, or does he take whoever the studio sends over?
Mary, I think we'd better continue this whole thing later, if ever. Right now, how about Embraceable You?
Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me, you irreplaceable you. Just one look at you, my heart grew tipsy in me. You and you alone bring out the gypsy in me. I love all the many charms about you. Above all, I want my arms about you. Don't be a naughty baby. Come to mama, do my sweet embraceable you.
Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me, you irreplaceable you. Just one look at you, my heart grew tipsy in me. You and you alone bring out the gypsy in me.
I love all the many charms about you.
Ruth Hussey, who is responsible for a good deal of the pull in H.M. Pullum Esquire, has proved in more than one Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer movie that she's the charming, attractive, glamorous type of young woman that any hard-working husband would like to have keeping the wolves from the door of some suburban dream home.
Well, thanks, Bing. But nowadays, the wolf at the door is the character who says, "Good morning. Now, I'm not selling anything. I'd just like to ask you a few questions that will help us in finding out the most popular method of operating a kitchen."
Do you operate a kitchen?
Well, I'm not the type of girl to shrink from a sink.
But you're a soft touch for a survey, huh?
Now I am. But believe me, Bing, someday my turn will come. Someday Huzzy's going to even the score. Someday I will approach an unsuspecting little home in the suburbs, ring the doorbell, the door will open, and the young housewife says...
Hello, honey. Excuse me, I thought it was the Iceman.
That's quite all right, madam. I understand. May I come in? I'm not selling anything. Just want to ask you a few simple questions.
I haven't time. I have the cake in the oven.
I'd be glad to help you with that.
Well, I have a pile of dishes in the sink.
Oh, I'd be glad to help you with that.
And I have a lazy husband upstairs in bed.
I'd be glad to help you. Perhaps we'd better take the first question.
Well, you'll have to excuse me. I just haven't time to answer questions.
Hey, Marva, if that's the lug from the finance company... Oh, hello. Hello. You're the one. You're the one who wants to ask some questions.
Yes, sit down. You seem to think you know all the answers.
What kind of a poll are you taking?
I wish you'd take that poll you put your arms around on Saturday night. One in front of the house that you try to sing two-part harmony with.
Now, please don't let us interfere with your work, dear. I'll just ask your husband a few questions.
Well?
Do you make your own clothes?
What's wrong with these clothes?
That's my answer. Now, I'd like a frank statement from you concerning the open-toed shoes worn by women in California. Do you think open-toed shoes are beneficial because they let the sunshine in or because they let the rainwater drain out?
Well, that's pretty hard to answer. I might say...
Perhaps you're better qualified to answer a few questions about your habits. Have you an outdoor patio?
No.
Where do you relax on hot summer evenings?
Oh, I just droop on the stoop.
We are not answering another question till we find out what this is all about.
You're quite right, madam. Now then, about your home. One quick glance around me tells it that many famous people must have been associated with this lovely old place.
Oh, yes, that's what they say. You see this polished place here on the floor?
Yes.
George Washington slipped here.
I suppose you've installed all the modern plumbing yourselves. How many baths do you have?
Well, since Harvey tried to fix it, we have a tub upstairs and a shower in the parlor.
Yes, I noticed when I sat down what a remarkably well-irrigated room it is. Of course, irrigation's always cooler.
Listen, lady, you'll either tell us why you're bothering us with these silly old questions or you'll leave my house.
Yes, your house has a definite individuality, a certain character. In fact, I might say two characters.
Well, if I do say so myself, the place has a certain air about it.
Oh, definitely. Cabbage, isn't it?
I told you I was preparing dinner.
Let's see, cabbage for dinner. Now, just one more. What do you generally have for breakfast?
I make waffles.
Do you use a specially prepared waffle flour, or do you just retread old pancakes?
Well, now that you know all about us, would you mind telling us just why you're asking all these questions? Is it for some magazine?
No.
Is it for some food product?
Uh-uh.
Well, it is for the government.
Oh, no.
Then why do you want to know all the things you've asked us?
I'm just nosy.
Thank you, Ruth Hussey. Thank you very much. Now the world knows what it will be up against when Ruth Hussey starts making house-to-house surveys.
Seriously, Bing, it must be awfully hard work that those investigators do. Maybe I'd better stick to my present life.
Yes, you got a lot of speed.
About Mary, for Mary is plainly lovely. When she's with me, I'm a happy guy. Mary, without her, I'm lonely. And if she will say I do, then I will too, and may Mary mine.
We proceed now in the general to my friend and colleague, Victor Borger. Hey, Victor. Vic! Victor's over there gazing off into space with the animated expression of a sent jitterbug. Hey, Vic, come too. Speak to me, Vic.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bing. I was just dreaming of my childhood. When I went to school and all that, you know.
What did you specialize in at school? Music?
No. Manual training.
Yeah?
I loved manual training, you know. I used to like to tinker. I could tinker all day. You know, they used to say I was the greatest tinker in the school. You see, Bing, I always wanted to be an inventor.
Yeah, did you ever invent anything?
Oh, yes, when I was 21. I invented a cigarette lighter without a flint.
Oh, flint. How did it work?
Very simple. You press a button. An arrow comes up and points to someone with a match. You know, I can't think of my school days without thinking of little Peter. You know, Peter and I were kids together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But later on, I grew up. Of course, he grew too, but not up. He's still 4'3". But one day, in the square, he was so funny, you know? He was a funny little boy. The teacher, a very big, strong man, he said to him, as a matter of fact, I didn't say to him, he said to the whole class, we were 30 boys there, and he said, who stole apple in my garden last night? And everybody said, not me. But little Peter didn't say anything. So the teacher, he said, little Peter, you don't answer. So little Peter, he was seated at the last seat, you know, in the whole class. So he said, I can't hear you down here, he said. So the teacher, he said, Peter, why don't you come out at the desk here where I'm sitting, and I'll go down to your place, and you say something, then I'll see whether one can hear or not. Yes, little Peter came up to the desk, and little Peter said, who kissed my sister last night? And the teacher said, you are right, Peter. One can't hear down here.
Oh, he must have been a smart kid, that Peter.
Yes, you know, Bing, all kids are smart, especially babies. Have you ever noticed that babies can make conversation in any language?
All I ever heard a baby say was, dad, dad. I can't cotton to that kind of jive.
You see, that's just it. But I claim that a clever father always knows what his baby means, whatever he says. And I'll make an example with you, Bing, because I know you are a clever father. Well, anyway, you are a father, aren't you? Now, suppose you are minding the baby and the phone rings.
Hello? Oh, hello, dear.
Dada?
It's your mother.
Da.
Your purple beads? No, I don't. Wait a minute, I'll ask the baby. Victor, do you know where your mother's purple beads are? Hello, dear. Baby says he doesn't know. Now, little Victor, mother told me to put you to bed. Not even if a nice red-headed nurse comes in to stay with you? Now, Victor is a good boy, a good little boy. Daddy will take you to the circus tomorrow. Do you want to see the great big elephants? The funny clowns? You know, they have dancing girls. That's enough of that. Now, come. Come here, Victor. I have to put you in bed now. Daddy will boost you up. Uh-oh. Victor. Bum, 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 bum. There'll be some changes, me. Let's see. Where are those pins here? Where are the pins? Oh, here's one. Did Daddy hurt you? I'm sorry. Now, Daddy will sing you a lullaby. Rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetops. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. When the bough breaks, the cradle will fall. Down will come cradle, baby, and all. Somebody else's night for love, not mine.
someone else is a thing that melts to me. Just a comic valentine. Let somebody else's tears be shed, not mine. Let somebody else's face get red, not mine. I like playing solitaire, but until I can draw a pair, it's somebody else's moon up there, not mine. But until I can draw a pair, it's somebody else's moon up there, not mine.
Yes, sir, that was not mine.
Say, Dr. Crosby, how are you on diplomatic procedure?
Oh, you mean touting a sucker on a 4-5 shot?
Oh, no, no. I mean addressing members of royalty, you know. Right now, I want to know how to address a Bong. A fellow named Bong. Do I write Your Majesty, Your Highness, Dear Bong, or what?
Oh, now, wait. Let's dig into this a little deeper, Carp. You're about to write a letter to a Bong?
Well, sure. What's so funny about writing to a Bong? One of my best friends is a Bing.
Is this Bong anybody we know?
Well, look, if you've ever been to Burma, you've certainly run into that great potentate, the Bong of Wong.
Oh, he's the Bong you want to write a letter to.
Mm-hmm. I read in Time a couple of weeks ago that the Bong of Wong had declared war on Japan. I read that on May 11th, and just the day I finished it.
You finished what?
Well, it was a war song for the Bong of Wong. It goes like this. Bong of Wong. Mm-hmm. Bong of Wong. Bong of Wong.
You're in the wrong key, you know.
Song for the Bong of Wong?
I don't know about the Bong, Carp, but it certainly sounds Wong.
Well, I'm waiting to hear if the Bong of Wong's neighbor, the Wang of Pat's, going to declare war.
Look, you write him a song and he'll be plenty rebel. You better duck out now and gander the teletype while I continue with Kraft Music Hall matters involving Frank McHugh, Ruth Hussey, David Friedman, Ken Carpenter, John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, the music maids and Hal, and Mary Martin singing Jingle, Jangle, Jingle, of which Mary furnishes the jingle. I'm a jangle man myself.
Yippee-yay!
I got spurs that jingle, jangle,
as I go riding merrily.
As I go riding merrily along.
And they sing,
oh, ain't you glad
you're single.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong. Oh, Lily Bell.
Oh, Lily Bell.
Oh, Lily Bell. Though I may have done some fooling, this is why I never fail.
That jingle, jangle,
I got spurs that jingle, jangle,
as I go riding merrily.
As I
along.
Go riding merrily
and they
along.
Sing, oh, ain't you glad?
And they sing,
single.
Oh, ain't you glad?
And that song ain't so very far.
And that
from
song
wrong.
Ain't so very far from wrong.
I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle, as I go riding merrily along. And they sing, oh, ain't you glad you're single? And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Oh, Bessie Lou.
Oh, Bessie Lou.
Oh, Bessie Lou.
Oh, Bessie Lou.
Though we've done a heap of dreaming, this is why it won't come true.
Why it won't come true.
That a
As I go riding merrily along.
Oh, ain't you glad?
They sing, oh, ain't you glad?
And that song ain't so very far.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Always a sure shot in any show requiring a taxi driver or a traveling salesman or somebody's bosom buddy, Frank McHugh's teen characterizations have pointed up many a fine film. Since returning from our recent junket with the Hollywood Caravan, Frank tells me that he's been catching up a bit on his reading. You got any preferences, Frank? I suppose as a solid self, you're probably steeping yourself in the lore of the people.
Well, I've been reading quite a bit about that famous Irish general.
Which Irish general?
General Tim Oshenko.
Oh, Tim Oshenko from the County Cork.
Good boy. But to get back to my reading, I've really been burying my nose in the classics.
That's so. I'm strictly a Grapes of Wrath man myself.
I know, but I'm discussing books, not clothes.
Just what masterpieces of literature have you been delving into?
Bing, I've been catching up on the Drover Boys.
The Drover?
Yeah, you know, the Drover Boys on the ocean.
Come
the
in.
Drover Boys in the jungle. The Drover Boys in the Great Smokies, or fun in the smudge pot belt. Oh, I can see those fearless lads setting forth on another great adventure now. Another dangerous mission fraught with peril. Who knows what fate awaits the dauntless Drover Boys? Who cares? Who knows what lies ahead as Tom Drover gathers his brothers together and says,
"Let us go down to the beach this evening, Dick." They say the Grunion are running at Santa Monica.
How jolly, Tom. Bet me $5 on the favorite.
For the benefit of those who have not read the former volumes in the Drover Boys series, the Drover Boys were 3 in number. As a baby, Dauntless Dick had fallen on a picket fence and ever since then had suffered from a split personality. Fun-loving Tom always kept his ear on the alert and his teeth in a glass of water. One morning, Tom said,
"Dick, do you suppose I shall ever see Ramona again?"
As our old readers will remember, Tom Drover was attracted to Ramona Lightfinger, an old Indian shoplifter.
This infatuation went back to Tom's early school days at Easton Hall, when the sophomore class voted Ramona their favorite over a dish of chow mein girl, Cantonese style. And Ramona's sentimental attachment for Tom soon ripened into disgust. This happened the night the lights went out at her home. In a moment of madness, Tom drew her over to the Davenport and said,
"Sit there and muse. I shall run for a fuse."
Dick Drover, too, had fallen in love. It happened the day he met Dora Glandhope in the butcher shop near the pickled herring barrel. A romance already described in detail in a previous volume of the Drover Boys series called The Drover Boys in the Mountains, or Through Sequoia with Scotch and Scooter. Shocked at Dick's forward manner, Dora walked out of the butcher shop with a firm step and 3 pounds of soup meat. But reconsidering, Dora turned and said, when her soft red lips parted,
"Well, shut my mouth."
Dora's voice was changing. But her heart was true. In a few short months, Dora's love for Dick was almost bursting. So was Dora. And Dick was not surprised to hear her say,
"I have a soft spot in my heart for you."
"Oh, I have a soft spot in sixth grade for you." Can't blow.
But suddenly into this idyllic relationship crept a sinister note. Dora became infatuated with Dan Daxter. To our old readers, Dan Stinky Daxter needs no introduction. Nor does his tired toady, Tom Lagoon, more familiarly known as Sleepy Lagoon. Their infamous deeds have already been described in detail in a previous volume of the Drover Boys series entitled The Drover Boys in Flatbush, or Who Threw the Blibber at Captain Bibber. As he stooped over to pick up the blibber, Tom Drover received a telegram saying that Grandpa Drover, the Icebox King, had passed away and left them a cool million. Hurrah! cried Tom.
Now we shall have enough money to buy uniforms for our yo-yo team.
cried Tom.
Now we shall have enough money to buy uniforms for our yo-yo team.
Thus it was that the Drover boys rushed off to Yonkers to claim the money. In Yonkers, Dick Drover caught sight of a designing woman, and his lower jaw dropped in amazement. While making a mental note to see his credit dentist in the morning, Dick heard her say,
"Let me give you a kiss, honey. I'll show you what they mean by the solid South."
In no time at all, the seductive stranger had driven Dick to distraction, a small salmon cam in town 20 miles away. There, reaching for a mustard jar from a nearby hamburger stand, Dick mustered his nerve and murmured,
"You make me feel like I want to spend the rest of my life looking into your eyes.
Do you mind starting now? I think I've got a sender and the right one."
"Your lips fasten it. They look so red. Are they really so warm?"
"Why don't you find out?"
"I shall. Wait here while I get a thermometer."
Reaching for a piece of celery at a nearby hamburger stand, Dick stalked out. It was just at the moment Dora Glandhope arrived. Stunned, Dora fastened her eyes on Dick. Dick unfastened them and handed them back to her, saying,
"Dora, you're jealous."
"I am not."
"But anyone could see that you were."
"Oh, this'll get it."
"But anyone could see that she was, for her Adam's apple had just turned green." Dora had arrived in Yonkers to rescue Dick from the clutches of this designing woman. Turning to the stranger, Dora denounced her, saying,
"You are the sister of Dan Daxter, O.M., old meanie."
Exposed. Dan Daxter's sister, realizing her number was up, cried,
"Bingo!"
Turning to Dora, Dick whispered nobly,
"How can I ever thank you?"
Reaching for a nearby garden hose, Dora flushed prettily. Blowing her nose, she said,
"Well, shut my mouth."
And Tom flexed his muscles and cried,
"Dan Daxter and his equally fiendish sister shall never show their faces again."
But the Daxters did show themselves again, and what they did to harm the Drover boys will be told in another volume of this series entitled The Drover Boys in Hollywood, or At Sunset and Vine with Wolf and Stein. Where every evening the Drovers can be heard to say,
"Hey, Mabel, wait for me."
When they're standing on the street, all the boys yell mighty sweet,
"Hey, Mabel!"
When she wears a diamond ring, all the boys begin to sing,
"Hey, Mabel!"
Wait for me. They're unpopular as three guys can be. The only three that Mabel will not see.
She brushes us off.
Yes.
If you think this makes us sad, you should hear us yell like mad.
Hey, Mabel! Wait for us.
Time marches back. 1906, Theodore Roosevelt, President of these United States, is awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for bringing to an end the war between Russia and Japan. Japan won. 1906, the Depression of 1907 is in the making, and thinking men are saying,
"Say, Mary, how about this newfangled simplified spelling?"
"Well, I think it's perfectly silly. The idea of trying to spell everything the way it sounds."
"Well, what's wrong with that?"
"Well, I suppose we'll have to spell baby G-O-O-G-O-O.
Shouldn't have brought it up, I guess. Say, did you see in the morning paper that Harry Thaw shot that famous architect, Stanford White?"
"Mm-hmm. I read it on the trolley going out to look at the new house your father and mother are building."
"What did you think of it?"
"I think Thaw shot the wrong architect."
"That's a fine way to talk about your own husband's family's new house."
"Oh, I'm sorry I said that, Harry, because I was wondering, I started thinking that
Will the folks living way out there, do you suppose we could, I mean...
What could we could what? What's that?
Buy an automobile.
An automobile?
Mm-hmm.
Are my horses good enough?
Harry, do you realize the 1906 record show there are over 30,000 privately owned pleasure cars in this country?
Well, I rode in one of them the other day. I don't understand it.
What?
Why they call them pleasure cars.
You don't seem to realize what a luxury it is to ride on rubber tires.
Luxury, huh? You get a load of what it says here in the paper that the president of Princeton University says about automobiles.
Who's he?
A fellow named Woodrow Wilson. He says, nothing spreads socialistic feeling in this country more than the automobile, which represents a picture of arrogance and wealth with all its independence and carelessness. You want to be a picture of arrogance and wealth,
Sure, don't you?
No.
Then why do you work?
Because if I don't work, you go back to your mother. I don't want to see you living with such people.
Just what do you mean?
Nothing at all. Say, have you heard that new tune that goes, I love a lassie, a bonny healing lassie?
Don't try to change the subject.
Another big tune around this year is, I love you truly, truly, dear.
I like, won't you come over? Do you know that?
Won't you come over to my house? Won't you come over and play? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but how about Chinatown, my Chinatown? When the lights are low.
Oh, I like those snappy ones.
Got good time to it,
isn't it? Yeah. Like that new one that just came over from London. There was I, awaiting at the church, awaiting at the church, awaiting at the church.
But I can't get away to marry you today. And I just wrote a new melody.
You sure did. And then there's all those new songs that George M. Cohen is writing.
Oh, well, I think the best song he's written in 1906 is this one. Just get a load of this. You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever on high may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag.
You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever and ever you'll wave. You're the emblem of the land we love, the home of the free and the brave.
Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag. Those of our listeners who got a gander at the May 11th issue of the magazine Life, you probably saw some interesting shots of a young man who graduated from Pomona College last Monday. The young man I'm speaking of is David Freeman, badminton champion of the United States since 1939. Not only is Dave extremely adept with the badminton bird and the king-sized fly swatter, but he's a pretty rough citizen on a tennis court, plenty handy boy at ping pong. Having won several tennis and ping pong tournaments, Dave, I was wondering, is there any particular reason why you virtually brushed both ping pong and tennis to bear down on badminton?
Well, I figured I'd better stick to the game I could win a championship in by getting the bird.
That's becoming modesty, Dave, but don't tell me you weren't proud when you saw the spread that life gave you.
I was till I came here and saw the spread that life gave John Scott Trotter.
Think he's spread that ball? That's a nice save, Dave.
I understand golf's your favorite game, Bing.
Oh, yes, I like to shoot a game of golf. Sometimes I shoot a game of pool.
Is that all you shoot?
Well, I have shot some cubicle croquet. The only thing I really like to shoot is golf.
What about horses?
Well, long shots. Is it?
About how many women do you think play badminton, Dave? I mean, in round figures.
Well, I wouldn't know about that, Mary, because, you see, most women play it to get rid of those round figures.
Oh, in that case, do you think badminton would help John Scott lose weight?
I can't see where not.
Well, does being able to play tennis and ping pong help your badminton game, Dave?
No, they neither help nor hinder it, Ken. After all, the only basic similarity the three games have is that they're all played over foraminous fabric impeditions.
Ooh, what's that, foraminous fabric impeditions? What are they?
Nets to you.
Well, thank you.
I don't care what you say about the three games. I think tennis is the best.
I don't see why. Badminton is a game of endurance. Ping pong is a game of speed.
Yes, but tennis is a game of love.
Oh. Did you cut your teeth on a ping pong? Did you cut your teeth on a ping pong paddle, Dave? And then get weaned to tennis and badminton?
No, Bing. I learned how to handle the rackets first.
I see.
It wasn't until after I was initiated into a fraternity that I found out what could be done with a paddle.
Assume the position, huh? You told Ken that tennis didn't hurt your badminton. Does your badminton game in any way affect your tennis game?
Not much, Bing. The one big point of difference, of course, is in hitting a badminton bird, you use the snapping sort of wrist action.
Uh-huh.
While in tennis, you need a stiff wrist.
Every time I play tennis, I get one. You know, they tell me that... Tell me I flap around out there on the court like a fractured duck in a thunderstorm.
Well, probably you don't hold your racket right.
Well, it could be. I sort of clutch it up around the neck with an overlapping, an interlocking white-knuckle cross-finger grip.
That sounds very confusing. Can you hit the ball with a tight grip like that?
No, but I never dropped the racket.
Well, now that you've graduated from Pomona, Dave, what's the future hold?
I'm entering Harvard Medical School as a member of the United States Army Medical Corps Reserve.
That might turn out to be a little confusing.
In what way, Dave?
Well, look, Dave, in selecting your surgical equipment, if you come across a really nice piece of gut, it might be tough to decide whether to save it to sew up a patient or use it to string a racket. Awful picture.
Well, maybe Dave's badminton game had something to do with his decision to be a doctor.
In what way is that, Ken?
Well, for instance, are your best shots the cut and the slice?
Just bypassing the effervescent Ken for the moment, Dave, could you give any potential badminton players an idea on how to develop into championship material?
The first thing to do in tennis and ping pong, as well as in badminton, is to concentrate on returning the ball to the bird.
Mm-hmm.
Make a human backboard of yourself. Keep sending it back and let your opponent tire himself out. Make all the mistakes.
Is that how you got to be champ?
Well, yes. When I first started playing badminton, people claimed my return shots reminded them of Walter Pidgeon and Donald Crisp.
How?
Well, it made them see how green was my volley.
Isn't that a coincidence? You know, people say my tennis game is like Katherine Hepburn's.
How is that?
Well, Katherine and I both have a marvelous rally. We rally up. I mean, rally and rally we go.
Say, Bing, there's one very important thing we overlooked about having Dave Freeman here in the hall this evening.
Oh, Dilly, what's that?
Well, after all the jokes Easterners have heard about Pomona, we've got a fellow here who's actually been there.
Oh,
yes, that's the man.
That's true. That is true. You care to say a few words about Pomona, Dave?
Well, frankly, Bing, it's the best college I ever graduated from.
I shall tell that to Bob Hope. Thank you, David Freeman, for joining us here in the hall this evening. And may your career at Harvard Medical School in the United States Army Medical Reserve Corps be as successful as it's been so far in the badminton courts.
Thanks very much, Bing. And now how about a song?
Oh, gladly, gladly. Dave, what would you like to hear?
Oh, I'm not fussy. Anything at all, really.
Well, might as well be something you like. Go ahead, pick a tune. I'll be only too glad to oblige.
Oh, no, really, Bing. Anything at all. Anything Mary sings is okay with me.
Oh, yeah, Mary. Well, thank you, Mary.
While they're dreaming of Tom, of Dick, of Harry.
Click, 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 click.
Listen to the beat.
Click, 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 click.
Rhythm soft and sweet.
Hear the click of the little stick in the knitting serenade. You just sit while the click, click, click in a jiff, it will be made.
Five little fingers make a glove for someone your heart is dreaming of. Each little stitch a little prayer for someone who's fighting way out there.
There's no tick to it, you just click to the busy little song. There's a swing to it, you can sing while the knitting rolls along. See how you dream of that happy day. He comes home, home to stay. Sing and dream to the click, click, click of the knitting serenade. while the knitting rolls along. See how you dream of a happy day. See come home to stay. Sing and dream to the click, click, click of the knitting serenade. The beat.
Click, 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 click.
Rhythm falls and
beat. Very nice, Marion. From now on, I shall stick to my knitting. That is certainly a nice hunk of Jersey bounce. You keep that up and the Zoots are going to start calling you John Scorch Torture or something like that. How about segueing into something simple and melodic like Johnny Doughboy found a rose in Ireland?
Johnny Doughboy found a rose in Ireland. Sure the fairest flowers that Erin ever grew. All the blarney in her talk took him back to old New York, where his mother spoke the sweetest blarney too. Johnny Doughboy found a rose in Ireland, and she stole his heart with smiling eyes of blue. He said, darling, 'tis my duty to make an American beauty of a sweet Irish rose. like you.
Johnny Dovert found a rose in Ireland. Sure the fairest flower that Erin ever grew. Oh, the blarney in her talk took him back to old New York, where his mother spoke the sweetest blarney too.
Johnny Doughboy found a rose in Ireland, and she stole his heart with smiling eyes of blue. He said, darling, 'tis my duty to make an American beauty of a sweet Irish rose.
Yeah, that takes us right down to the coda for this evening in the Old Craft Music Hall, friends. But next Thursday, meeting takes up same time we got started tonight. That's the same group, too. Mary Martin, Victor Borger, John Scott Trotter, Ken Carpenter, the Music Maids and Hal, and First Person Singular. Over and above the beyond a little group, we've invited John Garfield of the cinema. Rosemary Lane just returned to Hollywood from an extended run on Broadway. And Major Marion L. Dawson, commanding officer of the Parachute Training Center at the United States Marine Base at San Diego. So don't forget next Thursday. In between times, don't forget next Saturday. Don't forget it's Memorial Day, and don't forget what Memorial Day means. It's a day to remember. Remember, there's a lot of money to be saved in war bonds and a lot of metal, a lot of paper and a lot of rubber to be saved. And remember, this is war. And above all, remember those who are now at peace. Don't let anything you do undo what they died for. Good night.
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for